This idea of managing fatigue or symptoms, like you say, a lot of people's overall goal is that they go away. And I had so many people say to me, I never even thought about managing, the word managing, and actually learning to manage it rather than have the expectation I just want it to go.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot about that, managing expectation. I would say on this topic, it's about looking at, there will always be growth. It's about looking at that rather than focusing on what the loss has been and what the decline has been. You will always be growing in your recovery, but you need to find the root cause and the root symptoms to sort of figure out what that growth is going to be.
There is always hope, and you are not alone.
Hi, I'm Christabel Braden, and this is my brain injury podcast, Hope Survives. Here we share information, education, and support for the brain injury community. This is an uplifting podcast to bring hope to your darkest days. As a survivor of traumatic brain injury and multiple concussions, I know what it's like to struggle to find hope. I don't want anyone to feel as alone as I did, and that's why I started my online community called Hope After Head Injury. This podcast is an extension of that, and I'd love to invite you to join along as we explore the realities of life with brain injury, with messages of encouragement, interviews with doctors and professionals, and survivor stories. No matter where you're at on your journey, there is always hope. With a little hope, you can make it through today. With a little faith, someday you'll get through the pain. Just a little love is enough to light the way through your darkest night. Hope survives. Hope survives. Hey, and welcome back to Hope Survives Podcast. Today's episode is all about managing symptoms and identifying your triggers for your symptoms and learning how to cope. There are a lot of layers when it comes to brain injury symptoms. Some days are up, some days are down, and it can be overwhelming and emotional even when you are dealing with just trying to get through each day. And so that's what today's episode is about. How do we get through each day, as well as how do we work towards a plan to improve our symptoms over time? And so Natalie McKenzie is here. She is the founder of the Cognitive Rehab Coach. She also works with Brain Injury Services in the UK. And she is going to share some of her expertise with working with brain injury survivors, as well as advice on how do you even begin to start to tackle your brain injury symptoms in order to move forward. So thanks for being here. I hope this is a helpful episode for you wherever you're at on your journey. Also, if you are a loved one listening for your survivor, thank you for listening, and I hope that this helps you to identify the symptoms that your loved one is facing. So thanks so much for being here, and let's get started. I started Hope After Head Injury 10 years ago, and it has grown into a global online support community. You can get involved and check out more of the online resources we have available at hopeafterheadinjury.com. Connect with survivors, caregivers, and family members through our Zoom meetings, our Facebook support group, or the Brain Injury Bible Study group. I remember what it's like to feel so alone with brain injury, and my goal with these groups is for you to know that you are not alone and to be able to connect with others going through similar circumstances. We are in this together. Now, I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and remind you that this podcast is for education and informational purposes only and not intended for medical advice. If you need specific medical advice, please consult your physician. Now, thanks for listening, and let's get on with the show. Today, we're back with Natalie McKenzie, who is the cognitive rehab coach, and she is here to talk with us about managing symptoms today. Welcome back to the podcast, Natalie.
Oh, thank you. It's so lovely to be back. I can't believe it's been, it's about 18 months, I think, since we last spoke.
Yes. And you were on season one of the podcast, and now we're here on season two. So yeah. I'm so glad you came back. And do you want to share a little bit about who you are and your brain injury experience?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know me or haven't listened to my other one, which of course you should, I run a brain injury rehab service here in the UK. I've worked in brain injury rehab, neuro rehab for coming up to 20 years. So pretty much my whole career has been brain injury rehab. And a couple of years ago, I started up the Cognitive Rehab Coach, where I provide more international one-to-one support for people that can't, don't have the funds to access our rehab services here. And I do a lot of education, a lot of talks, talk to people like you, different communities. And I work from a cognitive rehab perspective. So looking at sort of how you cope day to day with your function, how we implement strategies and scaffolding with some sort of, you know, psychological support along the way. And I also do a lot of work with individuals who have TBI and ADHD, which is quite complex. And also, since we spoke last time, I've also published the Fatigue Management Journal off the back of what we were discussing. And sort of that's been really successful. And I think we'll touch on some things there today about, you know, the day-to-day management of symptoms and the variability of them. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's wonderful, Natalie. And so last time you were here, we talked about fatigue management. And I feel like on the podcast lately, I've had a lot of conversations about, you know, what you can do to improve and things that, you know, different types of rehab or different types of things that can bring you to a new place of healing and brain health things. But I don't think we've talked too much lately about how do you actually cope in the meanwhile? How do you cope in the day to day, like while you're still in the thick of it? Because we've talked a lot about here's things you can do metabolically, here's what you can do with nutrition, here's what you can do with brain health habits. But I know in my journey, it took me many, many years to get to the place where I could even address those things. And I hope it takes you guys less time than me, yeah. Again, which is why I'm doing the podcast. But the ultimate goal is for the symptoms to go away. And the ultimate goal is to improve so much. But in the meantime, until you get there, how do you live?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think it's so overwhelming, right? You sort of, you all of a sudden have all these symptoms and you have all these changes and you don't know what they're about. And, you know, I think it, even for us as professionals, the information is very overwhelming. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of conflicting evidence. There's a lot of conflicting opinion. There's currently a lot about syndromes and symptoms and how, you know, how we term them and what it actually means. And I think for you guys that are living it, it's there's often too much. And it can be really hard to know where to go, what you're looking for, and what it actually means to you. And I think, you know, the internet's a wonderful place, right? But it's also quite a dangerous place in terms of how it can make you feel, depending on what you're reading. And if your level of understanding of the symptoms of concussion, especially if you don't even know, right? If you don't know that you have a concussion until you know, then it can be so hard. And I think, you know, things like this and the podcast are so important to help people just know that there's a place, know that there's some good advice and where you sort of go from there. But my biggest thing is to say, you know, initially, try not to get so overwhelmed with what's out there. And the amount of times I talk about it, and I think we spoke about it on the podcast last time, this idea of managing fatigue or symptoms. Like you say, a lot of people's overall goal is that they go away. And I had so many people say to me, I never even thought about managing, the word managing, and actually learning to manage it rather than have the expectation, I just want it to go.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot about that, managing expectation, because often people have a goal and people have an idea of what they want something to look like and how to get there, but they've never actually really thought about what it would feel like when they're there, or what it actually looks like when they're there. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense to me.
In but my people journey. Say, well, I just want to be better. And you're okay, you know, I'll say, okay, well, what is better? Is better that you're 90% back to function, or is it 100% back to function? Because if we're looking at 100%, do you actually know that you're 100% before? And it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that you pointed out that, you know, it's, I think for me, my journey is a little bit different than some people, because I've had a brain injury for almost 15 years. And the first 10 years was just like, I'm just trying to kind of get through. And at first, you know, you think you're going to get better. And then I came to a point and I kept getting re-injured that I just thought, I'm just going to be like this forever. My whole life, I'm just going to have limited cognitive energy. So when I started Hope After Head Injury in 2012, that was the mindset I had. Like, look, I'm brain injured and I'm never going to be able to get better. And so how can I make life okay in the meanwhile? And in the last 5 years, it has been a crazy awakening of, I don't have to live like this forever. And I've learned that I can do more than manage the symptoms. And so I think that's why I have had a lot of conversations on the podcast about, here's what you can do to heal, because I had stopped believing healing was possible. But I also don't want to forget, and I want to honor the journey that it took to get there, that you also have to learn how to manage it in the meantime. You know, you can't just sit there and think, I'm just going to completely be better and, you know, this will just pass. Like, you mentioned a phrase on getting back to function. I don't think about it that way for me. I think about it getting through to new function, because I don't think I'm back to how I was before, but I do think that I'm recovering in a different way, in a new way. And so it's like, especially however many years that pass, you know, people grow over time. Nobody's the same person they were 10, 15 years before. And so I can't expect myself to go back to exactly who I was before and the function I had before. But I feel like I've gone through these symptoms and gone through to a new place. But I still do have symptoms. And you know, for me, I found new things that have helped and worked. But if you would have asked me 5 years ago, every single day, okay, even like 1 or 2 years ago, because I had re-concussions. So it's hard when it's been so long. So many things blur together. But, you know, when every single day is a struggle, the last thing you're thinking about is like, what's this gluten and dairy-free recipe that I can make? Like, you're like, how can I just get through the day?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. And also, you know, you've lived it. If someone told you, when you don't want to hear that, do you? You don't want to hear you may not get back to 100%. And you're right. You know, it's not, you would change. And we talk a lot about post-traumatic growth. I talk a lot about that with the people that I work with. And that can be, it's quite an intensive thing to think about, because in the acute phase, you don't want to talk about what you've gained in terms of what you've learned. And, you know, I spend a lot of time with people in the acute, post-acute, talking about what are your values, what is important to you, what are you motivated to do, not what you were motivated to do, what are you motivated to do now? Because that often changes. And that post-traumatic growth, post any trauma, and head injury is so important. You know, I think people in those early stages, if they hear everyone saying, well, there's nothing wrong with you, just get back to work, you're fine, you know, rest, blah, 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 all of that, you know, to think that 5, 6, 7 years down the line, they might actually come out the other side with growth versus loss, can be a really, really difficult thing to think, and very overwhelming. Again, that sense of overwhelm that I was saying. And it can seem like a massive mountain to climb that's just too much.
Yeah, it can. And I think that mindset, it's such a fine line to walk, because at first you're like, I'm going to get better. And then you realize you're not going to be, it's not going to be how you thought. And I remember just thinking, all right, I'm just going to be damaged forever. Like, I'm just going to have these problems the rest of my life, and I just need to make the best of it. And I was able to, figure out a way to be positive and optimistic and hopeful. That's where the hope after head injury came from. But there is this sense of loss, and there is this sense of grief of like, this is not how I wanted things to go. And I write a lot of that stuff into my music. I have this song called Growing, and second verse says, this is not the life I wanted. This is not the path I planned. But with every twist and turn and every hurt, there's something learned. And that song's all about how I've grown through the struggles. But it took a while to come to that place. And I think the unique thing about a brain injury is the brain fog and the head pain and the symptoms that affect your cognition affect your ability to reason and affect your ability to see things. And, it's a lot easier to get depressed and for your mental health to struggle when you have headaches every day.
Yeah. Yeah. You just want a break, right? You just want a day where there's not something, and I think certainly when I start working with people, it's about actually also identifying and spending time doing this, which can be hard, to actually spend a good few weeks looking at what your triggers are, what your vulnerabilities are, what your symptoms are day to day. Because in that fog, you completely lose sense of everything and you can't differentiate what is what. It all just merges into one big cloud of symptoms, that big descending fog, right? So I support people to sort of really drum down and start, however it works for an individual. Some people like journaling, some people like just scribbling, brain dump, some people like drawing things, just to start to identify what is really happening day to day. Because again, then you can pull all those things apart and then say, okay, well, this symptom, like you're saying you've had lots of talks about, then we look at diet. This symptoms, we look at vestibular stuff. This symptom, we look at ophthalmology, all of those different things. But in the early days, day to day, until you figure out what you're actually dealing with, how on earth do you know which path to go down to assign the right therapy? But that period in itself is quite uncomfortable, because no one wants to sit and dwell and talk about what's going wrong really badly every day. So I like to look at it as sort of like an experimental behavioral experiment for a few weeks of actually, let's really look at what's happening. Because often, again, in that fog, things can appear a lot worse than potentially they are, but you're unable to see that because of the cognitive dysfunction and the overwhelm and the fatigue and goodness knows else what's going on in terms of, especially females with hormonal dysregulation. And, it's an absolute minefield. So you do need people to sort of help observe and feedback and identify. And, I think another one of your speakers had touched upon that whole idea that there will be recovery within that time. You just can't see it. You'll feel that you're going backwards and backwards and backwards and round in circles, but there will be that natural repair and recovery, but you don't know what that looks like yet because you're in it.
Yeah. And that's so true. And there's really no way to know what to do when you first come to a place of realizing you need help. And I think, at first you might feel, oh, I'm just going to get better. It's a concussion, whatever. Or maybe you didn't get the right treatment. Maybe you did. And you still are just, you know, but as time passes and weeks to months to years, even you start to just, you're in this fog and time passes and you don't realize how much time has passed. And you're just every day trying to do the bare minimum to get by. And that's a hard place to be in. Mm. And I think that in those moments is when you start to first realize you need help, it's hard to find which thing to do first. And that's where a good practitioner comes in, because they can help guide you. But not everyone has that. And so it's important to, you know, start with the basics. And, you know, one of the reasons I talk so much about nutrition is because that's something you can do at home. You know, your sleep hygiene, your nutrition, those simple brain health things we talk about on the podcast a lot, because I didn't know any of those things before. And making those changes for me came later on, but it's made such a huge difference.
Yeah.
But when you're in the middle of it, you might be listening to this because you're like, I have no idea what to do. And I just want you to know it's okay. Like, there's grace for that. And you'll find your way, but you can only do it one thing at a time.
Yeah. And that's what I mean in terms of that overwhelm, that when you're scrambling around looking for things, you can often find yourself in quite a dark place. And it is just sort of peeling back and going back to basics, like you say, and actually looking at what's happening and the small changes that you can make. And also, I think times have changed a little. You guys in America are a lot further ahead than this than we are. But for a long time, there's been a stigma attached to head injury, or not maybe a stigma, that's the wrong word, a lack of understanding and an ignorance that sort of head injury is all about people that have been in very, very severe, you know, traumatic incidences that are left, you know, in a coma or vegetative state and all of that, and not really understanding the impacts of things like multiple concussions or more NTBI or whatever they are on the spectrum of severity. But things are changing in terms of sport and sports concussion, and people are now coming forward talking more publicly about the challenges that they've had and making it less isolating in many ways. And I think that can be really helpful. I mean, I often work with my biz services type things. We work at the more severe end of brain injury in terms of people that have sort of been in comas for sort of six weeks to six months and have had sort of, you know, 2-3 years in rehabilitative settings, where insight and awareness is very impaired. And if anyone like that is listening, and you have a huge variety of people that listen to you across severities, you know, that lack of insight can also be a massive barrier to be able to be identifying your challenges and what your needs are, which is quite different to the other end of the spectrum, where you're so insightful about what's changed and you're so aware of your symptoms, and you're able to directly correlate your changes with a head injury. Whereas at the other end of the spectrum, where you've got such a severe lack of insight, that can really impact where you're going as well. And we see a lot of mood and behavioral challenges at that end. But yeah, going back, so we often talk about encouraging people to listen to the truth, to the stories like yours, like sportsmen here. We have James Cracknell and TV producer called Richard Hammond, and you guys have all the NFL players talking about things. And certainly I've had a lot more conferences this year, and people are talking about it more. They're talking more about the impact of head injuries, of concussions, of multiple traumas on cognition and on function. And it's, I think there's a lot of power in people like that, who talk about it openly without the shame. And I say that without the shame being the really important bit, because I think so many people feel that because they're told by many medical professionals, there's nothing wrong with you. It's anxiety, it's mood, you'll be fine, just do this, get over it. And I hope, you know, things like your podcast and the talks of other people about their struggles will help people to find the right early interventions and to also just not feel quite so alone with it. I think that's so key in the early day-to-day, today is a terrible day type, you know, just knowing that you're not on your own and that there are other people out there who share in that is really, really powerful.
Yeah, that's so good. And with the people telling you, oh, like, you're fine, or, you know, you should just do this, you know, sometimes doctors will say, like, sleep more, exercise more. But for somebody who has autonomic dysfunction, if you exercise more, you're going to feel worse, not better. And so if you have an impaired nervous system and you're trying to do these things that somebody without a brain injury would do to feel better, sleep more. Okay, but what if your dysautonomia, or what if your cognition, or what if you have headaches that causes you not to be able to sleep well? What if you're stuck in fight or flight mode? Or what if your head pain is so bad you can't sleep? Or what if you're so overwhelmed that you can't shut off your brain at night, you know? And so, you know, you try and you try, and then they say exercise more, and then you exercise more and you feel worse. That was me for so many years. It was like, okay. And so I would go to the gym and I would exercise really hard for like an hour, and then I would feel so bad I couldn't do anything else the rest of the day. And I thought I was doing what was good for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that I needed different type of exercise and I needed different types of intervention because my brain and nervous system was in a different state. And so it is really important for you to just know that if you're having trouble on the day by day and everything you're trying is not working, that there is something that will work for you. But it can feel like so hard to find what that thing is.
Yeah. Hence why it's important to find out first, which is the hard bit, what is actually not working. It's often harder to figure out what is not working than what is working. You know, I think we focus on looking at all the things that are going to help us without really identifying what it is we're looking for help with. Hence why I talk about that, taking that period of time to really detail what's happening. Because in the moment, when you, like your example, going out and doing all that exercise because that's what you thought was the right thing to do, because that's what people told you to do, in the moment, you probably thought, oh God, I'm not feeling great. But were you able to sort of, at the time, put all of that together?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the time, I just,
right.
I knew that I didn't feel good, but I thought, oh, well, you're supposed to feel bad, like when you're tired from exercising, or like, you know, I didn't know that what I was feeling was not normal fatigue.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well, a huge thing for everyone to take into account is that, you know, we talk about all the time, everyone is unique. Everyone's brain is completely unique. It's as unique as your fingerprint. The way that it is wired, where, you know, the numbers of cells you have, you know, we've all got these average numbers. What is it, 80 billion neurons or whatever? You know, they're all wired in a different way based on your experiences, based on your development, based on your life, based on you, you know, you. So what might work for somebody else doesn't necessarily equate to what might work for you. And that's even more frustrating, right? It's like if someone could just hand you a book and say, here you go, this is how you recover from a head injury. Wow, life would be a lot easier. But I think a lot of people, again, get overwhelmed with going and looking at lots of advice and this long list of different therapies to go to, without actually knowing if it's the right one for them. Like you say, you know, your body didn't need, or didn't, the right approach wasn't that, but you don't know until you've done it. And unfortunately, it's often the things that you do that don't work well that give you that insight into where else you need to go. And then I think if you're one of those people listening now that you're thinking, well, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've tried that, and you're still going around lots of different corners and opening lots of different doors to find the right answer, like you've just said, there is a door for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It just might take a few more attempts to get there, but it's certainly It's just having that understanding and knowing that there is something that will work for you. And it will likely be a huge combination of things.
Yeah, definitely.
Unfortunately, due to the nature of brain injury recovery, it will change. And it will often change without any warning. Or, you know, that for me and what a lot of clients say to me is that longer term, that can be really frustrating for them, where they think everything's going well and you've got all your scaffolding in place and these strategies are working. And then boom, something in life comes along and just throws you completely off track, because life has a habit of doing that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so important. And when you say, like, you try these things, it doesn't work, you know, I think about, it's also about the right fit at the right time. About 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, I had gone to a chiropractor and I thought it didn't help at all and it made me feel worse. Mm. Now, for the last year, I've been going to a different chiropractor that's trained in neurology, and it's changed my life and I feel so much better. And so, you know, some people I hear, they say, I tried chiropractic care, it didn't help me. Well, maybe you need a different chiropractor. Maybe it was not the right fit. Maybe that chiropractor didn't know enough about brain injuries to help you. And so I think it's also important that, you know, instead of trying each thing and just checking off a box, remembering every treatment is nuanced. And maybe at that time, my body wasn't ready to respond to the chiropractic care as it is now. It's a journey, you know, it's not something that you try one thing one time and then you think, oh, it didn't help. But keep searching and keep looking for new things. So Natalie, how would you recommend somebody figure out what symptoms they need help with?
So what I'd encourage is literally 3 or 4 weeks of really raw symptom detailing. However it works for you. Some people just record their symptoms on a voice note, because if you're having sort of difficulty with visual processing or writing or anything like that, voice note them, scribble them down, brain dump them, just find a way of sort of logging these symptoms and do that multiple times a day. So in the fatigue management journal, I get people to do that before they embark on actually trying to work out how to make their days work. Because we need to look at everything, every single symptom. And in women, I always suggest that you do it for a bit longer so we can and track your cycles alongside symptoms as well. So we can start to look at the impact of that. Because I cannot tell you how many women I work with who at certain times just cannot function at all, but could the week before to a certain extent. And again, there's lack of understanding about things like that. And thankfully now people are talking about it more. But just as I say, that initial symptom logging, and you don't have to have it all singing or dancing journal or timetable or anything. Just get them down on paper, day to day, times of day. And then what we can look at is what then makes those symptoms worse. What eases them, what environment, we then look at different environments, what type of environments trigger them, what types of environment reduce them. And then we look at how we can monitor them to then learn how to manage them. And within that, we also need to start learning what works in terms of recharging and sort of understanding how you reduce the symptoms. And I think people get very stuck in rest and recharge, thinking that what you have to be doing is sitting in a dark room sleeping. No, I don't kind of subscribe to that, because I don't actually think that's occasionally, you know, that might be what you need. But when someone says you need to go and take a rest, that doesn't mean you need to go and, you know, isolate yourself in a dark room with all these symptoms and the room spinning and awful thoughts going around your head. Looking at what makes you feel better, that for me is as big a part of it as well, because rest and recharge doesn't mean stopping all the time. It's about doing something less cognitively stimulating that brings you a bit of joy and just makes you feel better, even if it's for half an hour of a day, just so you can learn that those symptom cycles can be broken. And I think people get very stuck in that, often when they're surrounded, you know, if, again, this comes down to education, doesn't it? If family members, or if you're able to work, if you're not, irrelevant, but your family members, that lack of understanding of, you know, what your symptoms are actually doing to you, and that, you know, they might say, well, what you need to do is this, or well, you're just being lazy, or, well, you know, just come on, you know, find a bit of grit, blah, blah, blah. That educating them that actually, okay, if you're recharging and doing something for you that makes you feel good, it's not because you feel good and you've got the energy to do it. It's part of symptom management and recovery.
Yeah, that's so good. For anyone listening, rewind this about 5 minutes and listen to that again. Everything she just said, because you said so many really, really important things. So I'm serious. If you're listening to this, rewind this 5 minutes, get out a notebook and listen to what she just said again and write some things down. Because everything from spending weeks tracking your symptoms, that is huge. So writing things down and then, you know, going from there to know what triggers it. Why did you have these symptoms? You're basically an investigative journalist of yourself and of your brain injury. And so investigate it, get curious about your symptoms instead of just being a victim of, oh, I have headaches every day. Well, write down what you're doing, what you ate, you know, and learn why you feel this way. How did you sleep? You know, and that's going to feel labor intensive, but you can find a system that works for you. You could even ask someone for help. Play them the last 5 minutes of this podcast and say, help me do this. You know, just these podcasts are tools for you. So bring it to someone, play them that section and say, I want to do this and I need help. And let somebody help you.
Do let people help you, because there's so, again, there's so much power in educating those around you as well. You know, we as professionals feel like we're banging our head against a brick wall with professionals, you know, and we talk about the need for education, and it's not just at this high level professional. You need to be educating your friends. You need to be educating your families. You know, what does a brain injury look like? Because it's not what you see on the TV. The reality of it is very different. And I think, you know, when you ask someone to help you, you're teaching them as much as you're teaching yourself. And they will often give you insights that you can't see. They'll say, God, well, for example, when we were in the mall, you know, last week, you went really quiet and you felt you just seemed really distant. There's a trigger there. There's a vulnerability. You're not good in a busy environment or potentially a place with bright fluorescent lights. You might feel it as overwhelm, but another person sees it as you withdrawing and, you know, asking what they see. You know, get them, you know, if you're out with your parents or your sister or your friend, say, just keep an eye, will you? I'm doing this experiment, you know, make it a bit interesting. Will you keep an eye and see how I behave, or if you notice anything different? Because again, you might not in that moment know what that is, but if you then have a few weeks of data where you're, you know, every time you're going out to a shopping center, you're becoming withdrawn and you're coming home with a headache, or you're having to cut short a trip, you then need, you know, what I would be doing is going, okay, well, what's the lighting? Is there music playing in the shopping center? Are you having a conversation? Do you have a shopping list, or are you relying on your memory? You know, peel back all those layers and actually try and figure out what is the symptom, you know? And then, like I said earlier, then we can say, okay, well, if it's hyperacuity from noise, then we're saying, okay, let's look at going down the auditory route. If it's light sensitivity, then we're going down, you know, visual and things like the glasses, etc. So yeah, I think involve people, you know, make it more interactive. Strange as that sounds, it's not a game, it's a behavioral experiment. And it, you know, you are only you and those around you can give your version of what your symptoms are, because they're not in a book.
Yeah, that's so good. And even things at home, like you stayed up late and watched a movie the night before, and then the next morning you wake up with a headache. Maybe the movie was too overstimulating and you didn't sleep well. Or it was somebody's birthday and you had ice cream and cake the night before. I know for me, and I talk about this a lot because it's been mind-blowing to me, how much sugar causes headaches for me. And I didn't know, because sugar is in so many things. And the food system in America is a lot worse than yours. But like, there's so much processed food and so much hidden sugars in so many things. And until I really started to pay attention to it, I didn't realize how many grams of sugar that I was consuming every single day. And it's recommended to only have 25 to 30 grams of sugar a day. Now, to put that into context, this past weekend I went to a apple orchard for the fall, and we got an apple cider, and I looked at the back of the thing and it was 30 grams of sugar in one bottle of apple cider. And I'm like, and it's natural sugar from apples, but it's still sugar. Natural sugar is still sugar. Even though it's a little bit better for you, it's still sugar. And so I'm like, okay, this is the amount in this bottle is the amount of sugar I'm supposed to have in a whole day. And that's like a supplemental drink to everything else you eat.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's just, I didn't know how much sugar I was consuming. And then when I realized, I started to pay attention, I reduced my sugar heavily, I started to feel better. And then now I was able to track, oh, if I actually have sugar the day before, I have a headache the next day. And so that was me being an investigator of myself and realizing I didn't know this was a trigger and I was having headaches every day. So you might be consuming so much sugar that's hidden in stuff, and you might think, but I'm not having cookies or treats, or, you know, I don't eat dessert. But you might not know, like, there's sugar in ketchup. Like, it's in everything.
Yeah, you might be eating, you know, lots of refined carbs that are then converted into sugar. And you know what? If I had a pound for every time I ask someone that I work with, have you had water today? Honestly, it's one of the most, and I always say as well, for people to monitor their water intake, because symptoms can be so exacerbated by lack of water. And, you know, we sometimes literally just put small things into place, like an alarm every hour to have some water.
Yeah. There are a lot of apps for that. I used to use an app, a hydration app.
Yeah. It's the little things people forget as well, because this is again, the thing that you're trying to figure out is there's so many different layers. And I often look at it like there's a hierarchy of symptoms, and you sort of get on top of the big ones, right? You get on top of, you know, the visual stuff or the balance stuff, and, you know, you're having therapy for it. And only when you start to see improvements in those, do those other little pesky, more subtle symptoms come out. And that can make you feel like it's a never ending cycle of new symptoms. They're not new. They just hadn't sort of reached the top of the hierarchy yet, you know, and it can seem like, oh God, another one. But just try and see it, that they're all the same. They just, you're only now seeing the more subtle ones because you've got on top of the other ones. So I always see that as almost like a sign that recovery is happening. Reframing it a little bit, that a new symptom doesn't mean it's a new symptom. It's just, it's time to shine.
It's time. Yeah. That's so good. I would always think about it as putting out the biggest fire. So it's like, okay, there's like a tiny match over there, but over here I have a bonfire. You got to do this first. And then, you know, you settle down the bonfire, but the match has started to grow, and then it's lit other things. You're over there and you're like, oh, now this one I have to deal with. So
yeah.
And I'm so glad that you brought up earlier about women and our cycles, because that was never brought to my attention until recently. And my listeners know this because I've been talking about it a lot, because it's changed my life, realizing hormonal imbalances from brain injury. And different times in my cycle, I do have different symptoms. So if you were going to do this investigative journalism on your own symptoms, as a woman, log an entire cycle, maybe a cycle, maybe two cycles, and see what happens. Because if you are able to tell the different phases in your cycle, you will likely have different energy and different symptoms. And that is normal for somebody without a brain injury.
Yeah.
Every person that menstruates has these types of dips in energy. But for us, it just feels like it's more. And so if you can just like, it's empowered me to know like, okay, the week before my period, I'm going to have less energy. I'm not going to feel good. I'm going to feel kind of off. And, you know, just know that's part of like PMS for me. It's made me not put so much pressure on myself that week. And I know that I can't schedule as many things. Whereas before I paid attention to that, I would just try and do my normal schedule. And just then I would struggle and then I'd get behind. And so pay attention to all these things.
Absolutely. Even ovulation time, you know, again, you might have a couple of days, like 48 hours where you've got increased nausea or increased dizziness. You know, that doesn't mean that something sinister is going on, or that, you know, symptoms are getting worse. They're just maybe more exacerbated or different to another time. So yeah, as you say, that make sure you're factoring all that in this sort of investigative stage. Can never say the word investigative.
Well, it's probably different in your accent than in mine. So Natalie, can you just name out like what are some of the most common symptoms that you see from people? Because we've talked a lot about uncovering your symptoms, but what should people be looking for? Like, what are the common symptoms you see?
Well, certainly the ones that come to me most are the sense of just general overwhelm. You know, if we just take away a sensory symptom, so this general sense of overwhelm and low mood that is sort of misplaced. Obviously, we have things like visual processing, difficulty with sort of reading, being on computers, watching television, anything that's sort of visually processing information, problems in bright lights. And when I say bright lights, I mean, actually think about the lighting. Like, I'm in a room with loads of fluorescent lightings and I hate them. We turn them off at a certain time of the day, and that none of us in this office have any challenges with our visual processing. Difficulties with hyperacuity. Hyperacuity is that sounds and noise can be actually painful and very uncomfortable. As you've identified, things like headaches, looking at things like nausea, dizziness. And my big favorite thing, of course, is fatigue. And it's not tiredness. It's a completely different thing. It's just a huge sense of fatigue and fogginess. People often describe it to me as this descending fog. I'll be fine one moment, and it's fatigue is something that isn't eased with a good night's sleep. It's that, you know, and it fluctuates. And just like I say, for me, the biggest thing is just this feeling of overwhelm and lack of control, I think. And that people struggle to try and list their symptoms to me sometimes. And if I say, so you're just feeling really overwhelmed and out of control, is often what people are feeling. They just don't know what that it's that. Because again, it's that, well, people don't want to show a weakness or say that they're struggling or don't know what this cacophony of symptoms actually is. And for me, it's a big marker when someone comes to me in a really low mood and really scared, I guess, that they've got to a point that their symptoms, especially sensory symptoms, have just got to a point of complete overload and overwhelm. And, you know, what we want to be doing is helping people not get to that point. Because often people reach out when they feel that they've got nowhere else to go because everything is all too much. What we want to be doing, don't we, is enabling people to get the information before that happens. So I would say that if you've had any trauma to your head and you have some lasting symptoms that are lasting more than 2 weeks, you need to start to be looking at actually what they are, and if they're worsening in different environments, and if they are becoming more persistent before you get to, oh my gosh, this is just all too much. And it's, again, it's, that's not as, what I'm very careful to tell people as well is this isn't a self-indulgent, this isn't a self-indulgent process. And this isn't about looking for symptoms, because I think people can, especially when people are told that there's nothing wrong with them, that, you know, you feel like you're looking for symptoms. You're not, you're just trying to identify something that's different that wasn't there before. If I say this to all my friends and family, everyone should have a book that says everything about them, right? That their likes, their dislikes, what they're good at, what annoys them, what makes them feel tired. So that if anything like this happens, there's something to refer back to, because we can all have a very different view of how things were before an event that actually might not be accurate. And there can be a tendency when things change and there's more symptoms to think, to question yourself as to whether or not they're new or not. And again, this is where asking people around you is key. You know, you're not making these things up, but if you ask someone if they see any changes in you, and you trust, you know, you would assume that the person that you're asking, you've got enough trust and they know you well enough, you know, you need to be hearing it from them as well.
That's so good. And surrounding yourself with those people that you can trust that will tell you the truth. And also being open to hearing it. I know that I would get really defensive when my mom would tell me what I struggled with, or when she would, you know, and she, it's not like she did it all the time, but, you know, at doctor's appointments, when we're seeing the doctor and she would, you know, we'd have to talk about like my deficits. I didn't like that at all. And I would get really, I would get irritated, because I'm like, I'm trying to be better. I know I struggle with that, but I'm trying. But it's like, the reality is I was out of control all the time. And, you know, no matter how much I was trying, I was still struggling. And my doctor needed to know that. And, you know, I tried so hard to frame everything in a positive, optimistic light. But the reality is, like, then when I would be confronted with this is a real issue, I wasn't always open to hearing that about myself. So if you feel that way, I just want you to know it's okay. And it's uncomfortable, and it's going to hurt a little bit. It might feel painful, and you might feel, it might bring a, like for me, it brought a sense of despair. I don't know a better word for it than that. I was really losing hope, and it brought a sense of despair of like, oh, this is my life. And, but looking back now, I had to go through that to get to where I am. And it's hard, but it's worth it. So looking at yourself accurately in brain injury is extremely important.
Yeah, it's almost like asking someone to be your mirror, isn't it? And sometimes it helps if it's on your terms. Like you say, a lot of people say the same thing. You know, your family members, they'll bring it up in things like appointments, and you're like, whoa, like, this is like, okay, that's a bit harsh. And maybe, you know, I often, as part of the journal and what I speak to people about, is sitting down with loved ones. And, you know, but you might live independently, so that, you know, if that's the case, things are slightly different. But I encourage people to sit down and start to look at what roles and responsibilities there are, and delegate sort of tasks based on what your capabilities are at that time. And that can be a really good window of opportunity to actually then start having these conversations, you know, and say, okay, well, let's say that, you know, I'm expected to cook dinner 5 nights a week. I'm really struggling with doing that because of this. And then, you know, start educating them, but also then use that space as a safe space to also ask them what they think's happening, and ask them, you know, have you noticed that I'm like I said earlier, am I moodier at the moment? Is my mood lower? You know, am I being really snappy with you? You know, actually ask those questions. And it's interesting. I was at a conference. It was the International Brain Injury Conference this year. And again, you've got all these big neurologists and neuropsychologists and amazing professionals. And we were in a session just saying, and it was a simple thing that this neurologist said, that if you don't ask somebody a direct question, you will never get the answer. And it's so true. You know, if you ask your loved ones a direct question, you might not like the answer that you're going to get. But if you do it in a safe space, where you feel it's on your terms, that can make a big shift. You asking rather than them telling you, or them telling a doctor whilst you're in the room. You know, if you've got an appointment coming up, ask them what they're going to say.
Yeah, that's so good. I feel like we could just keep talking, but we are coming to the end of our time. I try not to make the episodes too long. I feel like we could have 6 more hours in us talking about this. But for everyone listening, I hope that you've gotten a lot out of this. I mean, I know that I have. And Natalie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. So the last question I always ask on Hope Survives podcast is, what are your words of hope for our listeners?
I would say on this topic, it's about looking at, there will always be growth. It's about looking at that rather than focusing on what the loss has been and what the decline has been. You will always be growing in your recovery, but you need to find the root cause and the root symptoms to sort of figure out what that growth is going to be.
That's so good. Thank you so much, Natalie. So if people want to get in touch with you, what's your website and your Instagram?
Instagram is The Cognitive Rehab Coach, and you can link through to my website and all my pages on there. And then I'm also available at The Biz, which is www.thebiss.co.uk. And I will see people on socials. It's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and keep up the amazing work.
Thanks, Natalie. You too. Thanks for all you do to help people with brain injuries, especially in the UK where there's a lot less awareness over there.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hope Survives podcast. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned, as more episodes will be coming each week. And check out hopeafterheadinjury.com for more. I'll see you next time. And remember, there's always hope.